No Jumper, coolest podcast in the world. And today, we got Boz on the podcast.
Yes, sir.
And so, okay, Boz, not Baz, which is how I've been always saying it every time I see your name in my head for all these years.
Yeah, it happens. I've heard a few iterations. But Boz, yep.
I feel like I'm just inclined to do more of like a sound than like a sound for whatever reason. Like, I don't know what that is, like that I just kind of grew up with that being like the default way of saying the A sound.
Yeah, I mean, my real name is Abbas.
Oh, okay.
And the dude at Chick-fil-A yesterday called me Abbas.
Really?
So, you doing all right.
I mean, do you have to deal with that constantly, though? Like, if you go to Starbucks and do an order, do you just write BAS?
I just pick fake names now.
Really?
But yeah, sometimes I'm Fred, sometimes I'm Mark. I make it easy for them.
I respect that. Because people constantly mispronounce my last name and my girl's name, and at a certain point, it's not like... I'm not trying to educate the world.
Like, I'm just getting iced coffee.
just give it to me.
It's not that serious.
I'm going to make this as easy as possible for you. For sure. Okay, so do you have a new album coming out, or are you just sort of doing press in relationship to the single that's out?
Yeah, you know, I do have an album coming, but it's really all about the single right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, because when I heard that you were down to do an interview, I was like, oh, damn, all right, interesting. He's going to have a new project. I'm going to listen to that. And then when I go on Spotify, the most recent project was like 2018.
Right. Yeah. You know, I've been doing, at least for my fan base, like I'm known for my albums and like cohesive bodies of work. And I'm, you know, I'm proud of that. But I was just challenging myself this year. Like, all right, like, you know, what is the next frontier I'm trying to conquer? I'm like, damn, I want some smashes. I want some hits.
Right.
So I've just been lining a few of those up.
Interesting. Do you still see like the value in an album? Because just for instance, I was interviewing Hobson the other day, and I mean, he ain't put out an album since like 2017, but he drops music videos that'll get 20 million views all the time. And he just, even though he's super capable as an artist, like and totally capable of like thematically putting an album together, he just ended up feeling like the fans don't really care about the album format so much.
I think, you know what, consumption kind of changed all of that. Obviously, like, as an artist, that's still, like, your baby is, like, putting these projects together and putting your growth into, like, this one concise body of work. And I still want to do that for myself and my fans. But, you know, you got to look at the landscape a bit. And it's almost nowadays, like, you put out your album and it's, like, the end of the buzz train. You know what I mean? It's crazy how things change because now people even... Albums are being carried by singles. Like, people are doing crazy numbers, but it's really, like, two or three songs that are just getting streamed nonstop. You feel me?
Right.
So it definitely changed the landscape. But for me, I guess it's just, like a personal bone to pick. Like, I got to make sure the album's tight.
Definitely. But, like, if you're really thinking about kind of just doing singles this year or whatever, like, does that change the recording process? Because like, there's a lot of songs that you probably make that you would never think would work as a single. This is the album track. This is a song that I care about, that I respect, that I'm doing just for the art of it, and maybe it'll make a great song 14, but it's not going to be, you know, the song that we want to spend all this money doing a video for or whatever.
Right. It depends what point, because I started working on this album probably like before even quarantine started. And then I caught a big chunk of it just locked in, you know, isolating myself pretty much. And I got real, I think I discovered the body of what the album was going to be. You know, and then the singles, I didn't start doing till later. Like, I just did the Jackie in May when I was working on the off season with Cole. And that just came about in one of those sessions, you know. And so it's just like, if you know what your album sounds like, it makes it easier to then craft singles that mold and fit into that sonic landscape.
Did COVID simplify your life and turn you into just like a studio rat and you didn't have to balance all the other stuff that you're normally doing?
It did. It gave me a lot of time to be with family. You know what I mean? My nephews. I flew my parents out here for like 4 or 5 months. They was just kicking it. And then, you know, prior to that, I was on the road since like 2013 or something, you know, like 6-7 months out the year,
right,
on road. So me and the homies were joking, like, I take that like once a decade low key, you know, without the pandemic,
right?
But if we just had like 6 months off, it just kind of regroup
with this Delta, man. It kind of makes you wonder if that's coming back around.
I really hope not, man. that would fuck a lot of shit up
for real. Definitely. But yeah, I don't know, like, when I think about Dreamville, like, hypothetically, I kind of imagine y'all like posted up in the studio and not really socializing as much as some rappers.
I'll be outside for sure.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is that important? That's a part of the process? You just need some life experience?
It is, for sure, yeah. Like, I do a lot of traveling, you know, regularly. I like to, you know, just be in the clubs, feel the energy. Mm. It inspires you. It lets you know even as much as, like, what sonics are working. You know what I mean? You might lead a club like, damn, like, my hi-hat's not bright enough, you know. My 808's not fat enough. Whatever the case may be, you kind of got to stay. I feel like you need to stay in tune, at least with the sonics. And then, you know, artistically, you can get a lot more across if the sonics are right, because, you know, otherwise the kids ain't trying to hear that shit.
Mm. But do you feel like, even as like a grown ass man that's been rapping for a long ass time, and I feel like probably a lot of your fans are very lyrical rap fans that want to hear good rapping and sincerity and, you know, interesting topics and shit like that. I mean, as a rapper, do you still kind of get caught up in the rat race of having to keep the kids happy to a certain extent?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, we're still in the music business. You know what I mean? You're making your songs. I think that's the art in it, honestly. The art isn't just you expressing yourself freely. I hate to sound like, you know, but the art is presenting that in a way that's palatable to people. And, you know, hopefully as many people as you can get it across to.
That's interesting, because, like, I feel like a lot of rap fans, or at least maybe when I was younger, I think now people aren't even pretending that this is any other way. But, like, when I was younger, it felt like rappers who did anything to be more commercial or change their style up for commercial reasons, it was always looked down upon. Whereas now, I mean, when you have a conversation with like a rap fan about where a rapper's at in their career, I mean, it feels like the default is to talk about how they're doing commercially, not how they're doing artistically, you know?
Right.
Like, everybody judges themselves on that standard now.
Yeah, it's kind of been, because even like the consumption numbers are in front of you every day. Like, you click Spotify, it's like you got this many streams on this song, this many monthly listeners, whatever the case may be. Mm. It's hard for people to, you know, differentiate those things.
Definitely. But yeah, I mean, I guess the success of the music is like impossible to separate from the art itself. So yeah,
I think that's the goal, is like to get that success in a way where you don't feel like you're compromising yourself or your artistic integrity.
Right.
And, you know, like I said, that's where the art is to me.
But like artistically on this new single, it feels like you have kind of like change your style up. It's more singy, it's less like straight rapping. Was that a conscious choice?
My last album, Milky Way, was starting to explore melodies a lot more. And even like just a brighter sound. And then I did this record with FKJ, French Kiwi Juice, called Risk, pretty recently. Another one with Gal Matias, who's a producer artist out of Denmark, where my style's been kind of growing more melodic over the years, as is, you know. So I'm sure to my fan base, they don't feel out of pocket. To someone who might just be like, you know, Dreamville centric, it might be like, okay, you know, this don't sound like a Dreamville record, but that ain't necessarily my goal, you know. My goal is to make boss records.
I mean, but is there pressure associated with that? Because Dreamville, like, as a brand, it's like, you know, I think about like G-Unit to me when I was 18. If they had put out a G-Unit rapper who wasn't gangster, it would have been confusing. And if Dreamville, you know, as a Dreamville artist or somebody who's so closely attached to Cole, a big chunk of your fan base probably expects you to follow a certain style, right?
Yeah, I think so. But I also think that's what's made me unique, you know, amongst our set. As far as my sound, I grew up, even the things I listened to growing up were, you know, I have four older siblings. They're playing me like Jamiroquai and Daft Punk and, you know, like UK Garage, all a real Eurocentric sound, you know, a lot of West African music. So I even have, on my last album, I have like two records that are like South African house, you feel me? So I think because it's not out the blue, because I've been, even my very first mixtape, my intro, I ripped the Jamiroquai beat off YouTube and I rapped on that, you know? So from jump, I've been training my fan base from that regard of like, there's really no box that I want to be put in.
Yeah, sometimes do you feel like there's a risk and like, you know, sometimes I feel like Spotify has sort of like flattened the sound, where it's like everybody's just sort of incentivized to sound the same and risk taking is not rewarded as much and everything, which is kind of a sad state of affairs, because I feel like the rappers who are really going to win are the ones who are willing to take artistic leaps and make something that doesn't sound like everything else that's popular right now. But sometimes it feels like the industry is geared in such a way that that is just not really prioritized.
Yeah. Again, that's a consumption thing. Like playlists, you go through the big playlist that you kind of feel like you're listening to the same record over and over. But what I will say is those artists that do take a chance, you see it when they go on tour. You see how quick their tickets blow out. You see how, you know, how quick their albums do. Look at someone like Tyler, you know what I mean? Like, we've seen Tyler's growth every album to like where now he's a top Billboard, blowing out all his shows type dude, you know? And it's like, if you stay consistent, if you keep building that sound, they're gonna grow with you. And then I feel like there's always that breaking point where we see it just like cross over to the mainstream.
Yeah, Tyler's whole career is pretty shocking when you really think about it, because he just has such a hardcore fan base that they're gonna follow him whatever genre he wants to touch.
Yeah, you know? But even for someone like me who was like casual, like Tyler fan with some of his earlier stuff, you feel me? Like some of his later stuff, I feel, is as he's matured as an artist, as a person, as a producer, now I'm like, oh, damn, this is like, this is the vibe. This is shit like I was growing up on. This remind me of Nerd. It remind me of Pharrell. But it's like, it's new. It's Tyler. It's like a whole new iteration of it. So, you know, it's like hats off to bro. Like, it's hella inspiring.
Yeah. I like that he brought it back to the rap shit on this project a lot. Like, I was kind of shocked, but it also was just, I don't know. It was like a real breath of fresh air after he took another project to do sort of all this experimentation.
Right. But the production is still like, it's still experimental. You know, it don't sound like a bunch of trap beats. You know, he's experimenting with his sound.
Definitely. What's your, when you're picking beats or when you're figuring out what you want your project to sound like, what's the process typically like? Because it feels like on any of your songs, it could kind of go in a million different directions sonically. It must be kind of overwhelming picking out the soundtrack.
Yeah, I got to be my A&R, you know? I think I always know. It's about balance for me. So if I know I have a certain amount of songs that are, you know, doing this like melodically and bright and just make me feel good, at the end of the day, I like to make like real feel good music. Like my shit not sad like that, you know? It's just like I want to make people feel good. But, you know, I'll know like, okay, I need a joint where I'm snapping, where I could rap aggressively because the album is lacking that, you know? Or I need a joint maybe that's got more tempo that they could dance to. And then I try to find those records within like the sonic landscape of the rest of them joints. Just so, you know, the goal is for people to be able to play your shit through, even though that's not how music is consumed now. You know, it's like it's a few stars next to the songs and people are clicking those songs because they see a star next to it, you feel me? But, you know, that's not how I create it.
I feel old sometimes when I'm around people and I put on an album and I click track one.
Yeah.
Let it play. Yeah, that's how I take it in, bro.
Yeah, nah, me too. Me too.
Definitely. I think a lot of people, like, on more of a mainstream level probably kind of first saw you or first, like, or most recently, like, thought about you in the context of that Down Bad record with Young Nudie and shit. And I know, like, from my perspective, we think of, like, what Young Nudie's doing and what Dreamville's doing as kind of being like on just other opposite sides of hip hop that don't typically overlap. How did that song come about and what did you think about, I don't know, the way it all came out?
I think that was the whole point of Revenge of the Dreamers 3. It's like, you know, Dreamville's always been kind of, you know, on its own, off to the left, you know, left of industry in a sense. And we were like, let's go to Atlanta, let's link with a bunch of people, let's bring them to our world. You know, let's collaborate. We all got a really open, collaborative process when it comes to creating music. So we were down there, Nudie pulled up. I think he did a couple joints when he came to the sessions, you know, and Down Bad was just like, I was the one.
Right. What do you think of street rap in general? Like, are you a fan of it? Do you sort of look at that stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely listen to more street rap than I listen, like, conscious rap, if I'm keeping it a buck.
Really?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it just give me energy.
Mm.
And then I like, you know, I think there's a lot of like creative things they're doing. Even like the Brooklyn drill scene, I'm heavy. Mm. That's what I play like when I'm in my whip.
Really?
And I'm trying to hear some turn up shit. That's you know what I mean? I'm tapping into all of them. So yeah, I mean, Future's like top three to me most influential artists ever. If you look at his tree of, like, you know, kind of offspring in a sense.
You think that era of, like, conscious rap is supposed to be like against street rap or whatever. You feel like that's kind of old school and that kids don't think about it that way? Or do you think your fans think about it that way?
I would hope not. I mean, shit, Kodak to me is a conscious rapper. He's a street rapper, but he got songs where you're like, damn. Like, I feel exactly where he's coming from. I feel his struggles. A lot of young boy, NBA young boy, like, yeah, they're considered street rappers. Those dudes are conscious as hell. If you're listening to some of the, like, the pain and the shit they're putting in their records, like, I ain't never been through what they've been through.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I'm getting it through them. I'm learning that through them.
It's crazy because, like, I just grew up thinking of those as being, like, completely separate poles in rap. Like, there was Talib Kweli and The Roots and shit, and then there was just whatever's going on the other side of shit. And you would never even hear, you know, 50 Cent or somebody like that, like, mention the other side of rap. It's just they didn't really overlap that much. And now it feels like that shouldn't exist. Like, there's no reason for that. It's kind of like an arbitrary distinction.
Right. Maybe it's social media, because we're like, everyone's tapped into each other's lives now, too. Like, you're tapped into everything that's going on. You know what I mean? And I don't think 50 and them had that. They probably was just very insulated in whatever world they was in, you know? But for us, it's like, you know, if I follow a couple accounts, if I follow your account, follow No Jumper, I might see what those dudes are doing or what they're dropping, what they're releasing. Like, everything is so connected now that, you know, you can't really avoid it. And then you'll be like, well, shit, I actually really rock with this dude.
For sure. Was there something about Lil TJ in particular that you wanted to have him on the project?
Well, did you get it?
I hit the fly, but I didn't.
That fly been giving you business.
But I didn't kill it. God damn it.
TJ, well, the song, really, when we did the song, I was explaining to Cole, the Jackie's, you know, well, he knows, but the Jackie's is a parkway that goes from Queens to Brooklyn. And I'm like, growing up in Queens, when you used to go to, like, another borough to see a girl, and you'd get to her block, and you'd start getting the looks from all the dudes on the block. Like, one dude might have been her first boyfriend, like, this dude got a crush on her now. You know, one dude's her neighbor who's been crushing on her forever. And, like, there's always that tension when you get on the block. And so then, you know, I was explaining that story to him. And we're like, well, shit, we got to get another New York dude on here. And TJ came, you know, repping the Bronx. So we had to do that.
Definitely. Yeah, I remember, like, when I lived in Astoria back in, like, 2003, 2004, that I met a Puerto Rican girl who lived in the Bronx. And she was talking about her neighborhood or whatever, and I was like, oh, I should pull up sometime. She was just like, no.
Yeah, it's a problem.
You absolutely could not come to my block. And she's explaining to me, like, my brother's a blood. Like, all his homies, like, they would press you. Like, they would, like, it just would not be some chill shit.
Yeah, I got my tire slash going to see some girl in the Bronx back in the day.
Oh, my God. I wish I had a car back then. I could have a story like that.
Yeah. It's real. It's real. Don't go to another borough to see a shorty. Like, you'll get caught up.
That was one thing that always amazed me living in New York all those years, was just how many people I would meet who, like, were from Cheapside Bay and they had never been to Manhattan. They had never been to Queens. Like, they went to Manhattan one time on a school field trip and it was, like, something to talk about.
Right.
Like,
I've never seen the Statue of Liberty.
Really?
To this day. Not really pressed to, neither.
That used to be my thing, is that if I had to take a girl on a date, I would take her on the Staten Island Ferry, and you could, like, see it, and that felt like it was something.
That's smooth.
Yeah. Cheap. It was free.
That's a good, that's a good date.
Yeah, I had no
get
money.
A little halal plate, little street meat.
Then we got to sit on the train, go up to, like, 50th Street or some shit to get, like, one of those really famous halal places. Yeah.
That's a good date right there for the low.
Yeah, for sure. Nowadays, they want you to spend money on them.
Yeah, now you got to go to Nobu and shit.
So I hear. You get into that?
What? I mean, L.A. turned me into that a little bit.
L.A., it's unavoidable. There ain't no free date that I can think of out here. No, we're going to walk around the parks and we're going to beat your ass.
Yeah, you can't do none of that. You can't do none of that.
For sure. Wait, how long you been in L.A.?
Like 5 years now, 5-6 years.
You're fully accustomed to it? You like it?
Yeah. I like L.A., man. It's real comfortable. You know, and I was able to do a lot more with the space here. Like, I got a studio in my crib. I was staying in the East Village before then. It was like 6-7 of us in a 3-bedroom, like, just grinding, trying to get to this point. So, you know, as soon as I got a little space and I could kind of move my operation in-house, it just made more sense.
The whole question is, what's better for the music? Like, the struggle of sharing an apartment with a bunch of people, or the serenity of being in LA and having a backyard and being able to walk outside and smell the flowers in the morning?
I think it's probably the struggle. That's why I still go home all the time. You know, I go home, I walk around, I take the train, I ride cabs, like, no car service type shit. I walk through the Lower East Side and bar hop a bunch of spots, just see what the vibes are. Like, that's what inspires me, for sure. But, you need a space to create. Like, I feel like L.A. is like a creative campus. You know, everyone comes here to kind of unload all these inspirations they're grabbing from all over the world, link up with artists, producers. You can't really do that in New York. You might be in a studio on the 7th floor, and the artist you want to link with is like on the 9th floor. You know, you're not even gonna cross paths.
Right.
You know, whereas in LA, I can't tell you how many just random artists I ran into like in the hallway. Like, yo, I fuck with you too. Like, let me get your math, and then you know, something can come from that.
There's like a certain energy in the air in New York that you just can't avoid. Wake up and you just gotta like get on it. Don't matter if you're on like 3 hours sleep. It's just that fucking energy. And then the way that everybody's forced to live, where you're like everybody else walking on the street and going to the same store to get a drink and shit like that. It's just like LA is so different because you could live in Beverly Hills for 20 years and you'll never have to see what's going on in Skid Row or Compton or whatever. Like, it just feels like everybody's sort of separated into their classes way more.
Right. Yeah, that's a fact. You should see New York right now is insane.
Just because everybody wants to be outside
back
now?
Outside. They're back outside with a vengeance, bro.
I hear.
If you got a week, a few days, go catch some of that energy. I need that. A month back home. I couldn't leave. I was supposed to go for like a week. I just kept extending my shit.
What would you describe as the thing that was keeping you there? Just the energy?
The energy. Yeah, it was so inspiring. You know what I mean? Here, it's like you said, like, I could be in the crib. I can go in my studio. I don't have to leave my house at all. I was staying, I had a hotel on the Lower East Side, and it's like, I'm hearing the shit outside my window. Like, I'm hearing the bikes revving. I'm hearing the people in front of the bars at like 3 a.m. I'm like, man, fuck this. I'm getting dressed. I'm going outside right now. You know, like, I miss that energy. Like, something about hearing everything going on around you. You know, all the noise, all the sounds of the city. It just gets you outside.
Yeah, definitely. Can you compare that to, like, how much time? I know you spent time in Paris and Sudan growing up and stuff. How, contextualize that against the New York vibe or the LA vibe in terms of like what you would feel like going to spend time in those places now.
Yeah. I mean, I still go off, and Sudan is ill because Sudan is like, you kind of always get to chill, you know? You know how we said the pandemic gave us like a second of all chill?
That's normal pace there.
Yeah. That's normal pace. Like, you're chilling with family, you're chilling with, especially me, I can see all my elders. They got like stories, you know, the history of our whole family, you know what I mean? You're learning so much. I'm seeing, like, you know, I'm just getting a chill. It's really relaxing. It's like detox, you feel me? Like, especially after touring for so much, like, you just always need a chill. That's one of the reasons I left New York. Because I was like, if I'm touring and I'm doing the after parties and I'm getting fucked up every night and then I'm coming home to New York and it's like tour times too because I'm out now till like 8 a.m. every fucking night, I'm like, nah, this shit ain't sustainable.
Right.
You know, so I got myself out west, and it was like detox, bro.
Have you been keeping an eye on the protests that have been going on in Africa recently?
I seen South Africa's going up right now. I got a lot of homies in South Africa. Mad love for South Africa, first of all.
Right.
It's my favorite place to tour in the world.
I went to Cape Town for a week one time, and just we were just out there riding bikes back in the day, but it just like occurred to me, like, holy fuck, like the income disparity just like stood out to me so much that it just made me like so much more curious about learning about the history of the country and stuff. And now seeing that they're having this uprising, I mean, I know that on the surface it's just because the president got locked up or something along those lines, but
he got like convicted. It's a lot of like ethnic beef out there, you know, because there's a lot of different ethnicities and a lot of like the political lines are drawn along that. And I ain't like no expert. I just speak to a few of my homies. I'd be like, yo, what's going on? It look crazy. And they trying to like kind of give me the news. But yeah, I guess the ex-president got convicted on something. And but it's a lot of corruption out there, you know, like their COVID, all their COVID relief, from what I've heard, all those funds like disappeared. You know what I mean? And so that's why they're so far behind with the vaccine. They're on, what, their fourth lockdown? They've been locked down 2 years. So I think it's a lot of things just boiling up to the surface. Like, yo, the government been doing this greasy.
Yeah.
And you know, it's bound to happen.
Yeah, I think like the oversimplified version of it is just that the people are so fucking fed up with just everything regarding their circumstances and how unfair their society is and shit. Like, I watched this clip on Twitter earlier today where a dude was like loading up TVs that he had just stolen from this business or whatever, and they're asking him why he was doing it, and it was like he was really saying like, this is the first time that I've really felt free. Like, it's not about these possessions. It's not about like any specific reason that we're here. But like in this moment, I really feel like we're free. And like, I actually feel the sense of relief of being able to even just make this small ceremonial gesture against the circumstances that I've been raised in.
Right. I think you saw a lot of that here with all the Black Lives Matter protests mm-hmm. that was going on. And that was, you know, that happened to coincide with the pandemic as well. It was just mm-hmm. like people being inside, being fed up, you know what I mean? And being able to use all that pent up energy on something that was like really fucking bothering them. You feel me? So I feel like, you know, it's not the same because they're fighting for a different cause. But in a lot of sense, I mean, they have their whole history of apartheid, you know, which is what only ended like 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So like that shit is super fresh. So it's hard when all these ethnic groups don't trust each other and there's nothing really unifying them. And from what I've seen, it's like their political parties are really drawn along these ethnic lines.
Mm. Definitely. Yeah. Like when you see like a bunch of kids looting a fucking Foot Locker, it's like they might not be politically minded necessarily, all of them, but you definitely understand that they just feel like they're part of a society that's set up against them where they don't have a voice, they don't have a chance, they don't have the shot at changing their financial situation that like my parents took for granted. Like my parents knew they could go to college and be able to make
buy a house,
buy a car, have a family, have more money than their parents had before them, and that was like taken as a just a given. And that is 100% not taken as a given for the generation now, where it just feels like you're up against something that you can't possibly rise up against. You know,
I just read something crazy this morning. Actually, my homie sent me a link to this article. It said that if you're making minimum wage, you can't afford rent.
I saw that
anywhere. It's like, yo, what are you supposed to do? Like,
yeah,
it's wild.
When I was making $5.50 an hour growing up working at the grocery store, that probably was true too in like the late 90s. You know, it probably, I don't know that I could have had an apartment where I grew up making $5 an hour either.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, what was I doing? I was working at a country club.
Mm.
That wouldn't have got me no crib.
No. It would take a long time.
It would take a long time.
But they want to convince you that like it's just a matter of you saving more money.
Or right.
You not buying that extra coffee.
Right, right. Working a little harder.
Yeah.
Yeah, nah. That ain't it.
One other thing I wanted to ask about that video, though, is that I felt like I noticed like a very clear swag upgrade, because like I was watching your older interviews, like you're talking to Ebro, you're just wearing a t-shirt,
right.
And I'm watching that video, I'm like, oh, he got the Balenciaga jacket, he got his hair done, he got his sunglasses. I'm like, to you, was that a natural progression, or was that you kind of thinking like, all right, like rappers get fly, I'm gonna get fly for this video?
Yeah, you know what, I think it was like growing up in New York, that's what we did.
Mm.
You know, we just was always getting fly. But I think sometimes you get a little comfortable. I think that's what I realized too. Like, I don't want to be doing no interviews in just a t-shirt. Like, treat it a little more seriously. You feel me?
Mm.
I think, you know, and a lot of that is also the lifestyle. Like, we're going from tour to this to that, and then you're like, oh, I got to do this interview, and you just kind of like show up. Let me do this, and Ebro, somebody I'm mad comfortable with. It's like talking to the homie and shit.
Mm.
But definitely, me and my team, you got to just be more image conscious, whether you want to or not.
Mm.
You know, whether that's what you naturally want to do or not. Like I said, like, we are in the music business. Like, this shit, a lot of this shit is smoke and mirrors at the end of the day. You feel me?
But are you partially like influenced by the fact that the guy who kind of helped usher you into the game is like basically one of the kings of not giving a fuck about swag like that? Like,
yeah.
Cole just don't feel like he has to play that game at all. And
yeah.
It's clearly working out for him.
Yeah, but that's something we talk about too. Like, yo, that's, you know, we all kind of came in. There's a lot of things we do as Dreamville that coming in, we took, you know, from Cole in a sense. And then after a while, you realize, well, shit, like, I would do shit differently. I would do shit this way. I would do shit that way. So you start to do that. You know, you feel me? It's like, that's him. But That's not necessarily me.
Right.
You know? So I think a lot of Dreamville figured that out, and that's beyond just like artists. You feel me? Like just even as a label, as a company, like now you're seeing people grow into their roles and take ownership of that and be empowered, and that, you know, that's healthy for all of us.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's taken as such a given that people just dress real good in rap music that, like, I've seen, like, multiple memes about that video, the Jackies, that where people were just kind of, like, marveling at the fact that Cole was just wearing, like, a regular hockey jersey or no chain or whatever, and you and TJ are dressed nice and shit. And, like, you know, that people in rap, like, can't help but, like, be shocked and in awe of that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that, but that's part of like his legend. Cole has a very like unique legend, like, you know, so they want to see that. They want to be like, man, like Cole's so humble. He don't got no jewelry on. It's like,
yeah. Like when he pulled up to my spot on Melrose, when we used to have the shop there, it was like the thing everybody was talking about afterwards was not, partially it was like, wow, what a nice guy. Like he was so cool and chill and taking photos with everybody. But it was also like, he didn't have a security guard. He didn't have, he was just wearing some regular ass sweatsuit. Like he just wasn't, his vibe was so peaceful and he just didn't feel like he was trying to like justify his existence through his possessions at all, which that was like the talking point once he left. That's what everybody was talking about.
He had
like,
that phase though, low key. You know, we had them tours. Cole would have a bottle of Henny on stage and the iced out Jesus piece. You know what I mean?
Right.
And then he grew past that. Mm. You know, I think he earned that. He kind of got to that level where it was like, shit, I don't have to do nothing I don't want to do.
Mm.
But, you know, that's not the reality for everybody.
He had a fucking story that went kind of viral at one point where, like, a stylist gave him, you know,
That same Gucci.
Yeah, or Givenchy,
yeah.
I think.
Oh, like, yeah, sweatshirt. Versace, something like that.
And then, like,
it was like BT Awards
French
or something.
And Trey Songz I remember or some that day. Shit both had it on, too.
Yeah, I remember that day. Bro, it was hot, but it was funny. Like, we was all cracking jokes about that.
I feel like I learned, I had like a, sometimes I feel like very rarely.
I think that, by the way, not to cut you off, I think that's where you saw the end of that for Cole, by the way.
Yeah.
I think that very moment.
That's what he said.
Was like, it's a wrap. I ain't playing this game no more.
Right.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's one thing to get fresh. I respect people who want to dress nice and stuff, but when it comes to just listening to a stylist and just letting the stylist sort of create who you are, so then you accidentally end up looking exactly like a bunch of other people. It's like, doesn't that take the whole point? Like, the point of style or fashion, if you're gonna put attention or time into it, is to have your own
differentiate
image.
Right.
And if you don't really give a fuck like that about the clothes, then I guess at a certain point you're gonna just end up wearing the same shit as everybody else.
Yeah, facts.
Like, I remember when I first started to like kind of get money, I bought this like Gucci windbreaker. And then I felt like the industry or the universe actually kind of told me to fall back on that, because then Cole had that one video where he was basically dressing and acting like a SoundCloud rapper or like a corny ass rapper, you know?
Yeah.
And you know what jacket he was wearing in that video? That one. My first ever Gucci windbreaker. I'm like, this is weird. This really feels
that's
like
a message. That's the universe.
The universe is trying to tell you that this is not it. Yeah.
That's hysterical, bro.
Kind of blew my mind. I don't know. Okay, so I also wanted to talk about, are you still like heavily invested in the Fiends brand? Because I never knew that was your shit, because I've seen people wearing it all over the years, over and over.
Yeah, that's me. That's me and the homies. That's like our creative collective. It started like in the West Village in New York. We had this one crib called the Carter.
Uh-huh.
We just, it's
you
just
called
like,
it the Carter?
We called it the Carter.
It had a crack house vibe?
Kind of.
We
definitely
crack.
Not actual crack, but we definitely, you know, did our fair like experimenting with drugs in that household.
Oh, okay.
And at the time I had dropped out of college, my manager Derek was going to NYU and he was like managing the basketball team, so they had this crib down there. We should throw like parties on the rooftop, just go crazy. That's where I literally wrote my first raps on like some 6 a.m. faded, let's open up GarageBand and start rapping type shit. So that's where that whole thing started. It was a creative collective. And so then some people would be doing like videography. Like my first videos was one of the Fiends. Some homies were doing production. You know, I was rapping. Some homies were doing marketing. So it kind of became like our little crew in a sense. Mm-hmm. So then when it came time to make merch, I was always like, man, I don't want nothing like with my face and name on it. Like I thought that shit was corny because I don't really wear other people's faces on me, unless it's like, you got to be a legend. You got to be like Bob Marley or some shit.
That was
right?
The first name that came to mind. Yeah, so right? You got to be like a real legend.
A real legend. Otherwise, like, I'm not wearing your face. So we just kind of made that the thing. And it's cool because now it's like a flag. Like my homie was like, he hit me. He was like, yo, I was in Seoul, like in South Korea. And I was like online for the club and I had a Fiend shirt on. And he was like, these dudes were going in with like bottle service and they saw me and they just like pulled me in on some, oh, you fuck with the Fiends type shit. I get those stories all the time now. Like it's just been like, wow, like a flag. Like people find each other and they be like, oh, like you fuck with it. All right, come on. Like I'm gonna hold you down type shit. That'd be the coolest part to me.
Hell yeah. I actually have a friend who has a bike company called Fiend. And I don't know if you've ever like seen somebody wearing a shirt that said Fiend and you're like, wow, that's weirdly similar. That's one letter away from my brand. I don't know if you ever spotted that.
I haven't peeped it. It's a bike company?
Yeah.
Like motorcycles?
BMX bikes.
Oh, fire.
Yeah.
We got to do something.
They probably do.
Let's make a bike.
They could do it. They make
bikes.
That'd
be hard. That'd be real hard. Yeah, you got to connect me.
They could definitely do that. Yeah, for sure. You fuck with the rapper Fiend?
I'm not very familiar.
Oh, okay. It was with No Limit back in the day, too. I was just wondering
if there's... You said No Limit?
Yeah. I was wondering if there's any synergy that ever popped up there.
Nah.
Okay.
Can't say there is.
I feel you. Okay, so in terms of, like, where you're trying to go with the next releases off of, like, you know, from this body of work that you're kind of dealing with and stuff, like, you have this project, this one song you're pushing super hard. Do you have other stuff that's... in your mind in terms of like
I got what a single the next... with Gunna that's gonna go crazy.
Seriously?
Shout out to Gunna. Yeah.
Wow, probably nobody expected to hear that.
I know. That's what I'm trying to do, man. I'm trying to do some unexpected shit, but I'm bringing these people into my world, you know, so at the same time my fan base could be like, damn, he did a track with TJ, but I fuck with it. He did a track with Gunna. Like you said, you know, Dreamville's probably not associated with those type of artists. And in a way I'm trying to break that mold. So shout out to Gunna. We got honestly, I like that song better than the Jaggy. I almost led with that.
Okay.
Shout out to Gunna.
Did you actually get in the studio with him, or how did that come about?
It was over the pandemic. We got like mutual friends.
Okay.
You know, a lot of homies in Atlanta. Obviously, we got Earth Gang and Jid in Atlanta, and like their management. Shout out to Barry. Since the '80s, them homies, they helped connect a lot of that.
For sure. Yeah, like JID. Earth Gang. Those are kind of artists that we sort of like think of you as being sort of on the same wavelength as, I guess. But yeah, it's interesting to see you trying to branch out and doing stuff with somebody like Gunna. Like when you think about Gunna, like he just kind of, people think of him as being more of like a aesthetic guy rather than a lyrical guy.
Bro, he be rapping his ass off though. Mm. Like he's really, really fucking good. Like he's really good. Like, he's a really good rapper. Like I think people sleep on that.
Definitely. Okay, so what else do you have going on in your life that you're excited about at this point or that's getting you hyped up?
I'm happy that, you know, festival season's coming back around.
Mm.
I'm dying to do some shows. I'm sure all my peers are. Just dying to get back out there, you know, see the fans, get high and shit, kick it with them.
Mm.
It's going to be a good time.
Were you getting more or less high during the pandemic?
I'll probably get more high.
Right.
Had less shit to do.
Mm.
You know?
These edibles, this has kind of become a thing for me during the pandemic. I don't know if you wanted these fucking 2020 rings, but bro.
Say a word.
Currency ate three of them on this podcast.
How'd that go?
He was pretty fucking high. Like,
see,
he,
if
even
I get
him.
Too high, though, I won't have much to say to you.
Yeah.
Not out of some malicious intent. I just be that high where I just be like, man, I don't even got the effort to speak.
But I've seen that happen with people who are seasoned, like, mega weed smokers where they smoke weed immediately before the podcast and they just get kind of weird and they're just not really communicating the way that they normally would. Currency wrote it out great. He was just sliding. Like, he was smoking his shit the whole time, but then the gummies by the end of it set in. Like, you could actually... You really saw Currency high as fuck, which I think you always see Currency at a moderate highness level.
Yeah, right? Yeah. You never seen him sober.
Yeah, he's always a little high, but, like, once he had eaten a few of those, then he was definitely, like, at a different stage. It was pretty impressive.
I'm gonna have to fuck with those.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Man, I just heard that the fucking opiate deaths were up like 30% during the pandemic in America.
I've seen that. They're putting fentanyl in everything, bro.
Yeah.
That shit's scary.
That is the shit.
Even in like non-opiates. You can't really fuck with nothing these days.
They're saying they put it in weed. I'm kind of confused about how and why that is happening, but
I seen that. I seen they're putting it in like coke and shit.
Coke? Oh, cocaine. Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
That don't even make sense.
No, that's the opposite reaction that you're going for when you do coke.
That don't make no sense. I don't even know why you would do that, but they're really fucking the game up.
Yeah.
Stop putting fentanyl in this shit, man. Public service announcement. Motherfuckers trying to have a good time out here.
I stopped putting drugs on my nose before the fentanyl wave hit, but I guess actually that's not true. But that to me now is like if you didn't have a good reason to not be doing drugs like that, that just stands out now.
It's a crapshoot. You playing the lottery.
Yeah.
Or get like a kit, test your shit. But like, right. You know what I mean? Niggas be in the middle of the club looking for the plug. Like, who got a kit on them?
Now me and my friend.
Stop fucking with randos.
Wait, do they really be looking for the kit in the club?
Nah, I'm just saying, man. It'd be tough.
No,
it'd
it
be
seems tough. Hard like, to imagine. Yeah.
It'd be too hard to pull that off.
But now me and my friends talk about, like, remember back in the day when people would just give us, like, Xans at shows and we just take them
festivals,
and shit.
Like, you take whatever people gave you.
You take all kinds of five different drugs that five different people gave you. And when I think about that now, that's really pretty close to playing Russian roulette.
Yeah, it's deadly.
Yeah.
Deadly. People that do that, they won't take the vaccine though. But they're gonna take some random drugs.
You're pro vaccine?
I mean, I just want the world to get back to it. I can't tell nobody what to do with their body. I got vaxxed.
Me too.
You know?
I got vaxxed and still got COVID, so
I heard. That's crazy. I seen that. That Delta is out here.
Yeah, I don't know. That shit was pretty crazy to me. I mean, like, what's interesting is that me and Wiz Khalifa have a mutual friend, AD, who just got tested. And he didn't have it, but he was terrified because Wiz got it and I got it. And he had just been spending a bunch of time with both of us. And so he was fucking tripping thinking that he got it. But I guess he didn't get it. And Wiz says he didn't have no symptoms, even though I don't think he was vaccinated.
I mean, he tested for it?
Yeah, he tested positive for it, though.
Damn, that's crazy.
You should be so lucky because, man, I was sweating my ass off, fucking, like, you know, I felt like death for, like, one day and then felt all right after that.
Yeah,
but
my homie had it. He said it felt like a Molly hangover.
Yeah.
Is that accurate?
It didn't have the, like, depression, misery, dopamine. Yeah, man, I don't miss that at all.
Nah, me neither.
The Molly come down was a nightmare.
Atrocious.
Yeah. Once that started to consume my entire next day, that's when I was like, I got to hang this up.
Yeah. I feel you. I feel you.
When's the last time you did Molly? Let's get an exclusive here for the podcast.
Man, this had to have been at least like, was it the Forest Hills Drive tour? There was one tour. We went, the first time I went to Europe, or the second time I went to Europe with Cole, it was a bunch of us like drinking Molly water every goddamn day.
Every day?
Pretty much every day. And then after that tour, I was like, I don't ever want to do this shit again.
Yeah. In England, they're big on that, or in Europe in general.
I was banged up every day. I was like, this ain't it. I was feeling good for like a few hours out of the day, and then the rest of it, I was just so banged up.
Like, Molly water is like weird branding, where it's like, oh, it's water. you're hydrating yourself. It can't be that bad.
Yeah. No, it's not it. It's not it.
For sure. You're going to have some songs about Molly water when the project finally drops?
I probably made those songs already.
Mm.
I don't know if I'm revisiting that period in life. You know, unless I really go searching for the source and get some inspiration. But I ain't got no reason. Who knows how I'm act when these festivals come back, though. I feel like, you know, I'm a brand new nigga. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah. Shit is crazy because, like, now that I don't do drugs, nobody ever mentions drugs to me or ever offers me drugs and shit. But I remember when I was doing drugs that people could just sniff it out on you and will just offer you drugs over and over. It is. And they can tell.
Yeah, and when you're on them, everyone is like, you start thinking like, damn, everybody in the world do drugs.
Yeah, for sure. Especially like coke out here, where it's just like,
crazy.
There really is so many goddamn people that are doing it.
It's real.
It's scary. But you know what sucks about, like, I've been in enough situations where you're like in a club or a party or some shit, and you're totally sober, and I'm looking at girls that are on Molly and thinking like, if I was fucked up, I would think that she was cool, like that she was just having a good time, and that it really is not what you're looking at there. No. Like, actually, she belongs in a hospital right now. She should not be somebody that you're thinking about making out with or something. Like, once you see it from that sober perspective, I advise a lot of people, you got to go out sober and just see how fucking crazy people look when you're in that environment. It'll make you think differently about the world, you know?
Yeah, it's stressful. watching, being sober and watching people that's really fucked up, that should be stressing me out. Like,
and they're screaming in your face and they're so excited about something, and I'm just sweating, standing there like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Sweating profusely.
Yeah.
Like, nah, bro, I don't got the same energy as you.
Yeah.
I don't feel it.
Yeah. And then you think, like, fuck, I got to take a couple drinks or something.
Yeah,
at least sort of get on your level. You can't be that bad right now. I feel real. It. All right. Anything you want the people to look out for? Anything coming down the pipe that you're excited about?
Man, just go out and run it up on the Jackie. We try and go all the way with that one. You know what I mean? We're coming back with more singles. That's it, really. Everything Dreamville associated. Look out for that.
For sure. Keep an eye out. I'm excited. Appreciate you, man.
Yeah, thank you.
Boz, No Jumper, coolest podcast in the world. Check us out on YouTube. Producers are on the screen right now. Check us out on Patreon. Like, comment, subscribe, and appreciate each and every one of you.